Area Chamber of Commerce.
It's 12:11 on this Friday afternoon here at AM 1300 WMEL. It's the Friday Information Overload Hour. John Harper with you. And as we always like to do on Friday, we bring Peter Karasotis in here from SpaceCoastDaily.com to talk about some sports. And Peter, are you there?
I am here.
Great, excellent. Always good to hear you. And we've got plenty of things to talk about today, but first let's get to that Mike Erdman trivia question.
Brought to us by Mike Erdman, Nissan Cadillac on Merritt Island. Our winner gets a free oil change at his dealership. And here's our trivia question. R.A. Dickey, right now they're reviewing his one-hitter against the Tampa Bay Rays the other night to see if a special score is hit. Can now be ruled as an error, and then he'll get a no-hitter. But be that as it may, he also extended his scoreless inning streak that game to 31 and a third inning, setting a record for the New York Mets. So our Mike Erdman trivia question is this. Whose record did he break? Which Met pitcher had the scoreless innings record that he broke the other night against the Tampa Bay Rays at Tropicana Field?
All right, good question indeed. And if you think you know the answer to that and you want to give us a call and perhaps win that Mike Erdman oil change, which as Peter and I talk every week has a great value to it, probably when it's all said and done in the ballpark of close to $40 or more. So you really need to take advantage of that. Give us a call if you have the answer to the trivia question that Peter just gave us. 631-1300 is our phone number, and let us know what you think the answer is to the trivia question there from Peter Karasotis. Peter, you just mentioned R.A. Dickey with the New York Mets and that one-hitter or
possibly a no-hitter.
Possibly. And what's going on behind all this?
Well, he is such an interesting story in baseball right now. He is 10-1 with the New York Mets. He's got a 2.20 ERA. He has struck out 90 batters in the 90 innings that he's pitched. He is the last man standing now since our hometown boy, Tim Wakefield, retired. The last man standing in regards to the only knuckleball pitcher left in Major League Baseball. Now, that in and of itself makes him unique. You know, knuckleball pitchers are always unique. But also, if you look at his 10-1 record and 2.20 ERA, you'd have to say he's probably the best pitcher in baseball this year, should start the All-Star game, and if he continues on this course, he will become the first knuckleball pitcher in Major League Baseball history to win the Cy Young Award. I mean, we're used to knuckleball pitchers winning perhaps a lot of games, but they also lose a lot of games. So guys with 19 and 18 records don't usually win the Cy Young Award. But he's 10-1, and he has been dominating. This scoreless inning streak of 31 and a third innings, you know, that started against the Pittsburgh Pirates, our hometown boy Clint Hurdle's team. Went to San Diego, St. Louis, Washington, and then the other night against the Tampa Bay Rays. And he has been brilliant in baffling hitters this year. Now, the other thing that makes R.A. Dickey so interesting and a guy that you really root for is came out with his biography, his autobiography, really, this spring. And I was covering the Mets those few days for the New York Times when his book came out. And we all got, an early copy of it before it was on the newsstands. And in the book, he outlined sexual abuse as a child by both men and women had sexually abused him, and that he has struggled with suicidal thoughts as an adult. And he, you know, he outlined all that in the book. When you talk to R.A. Dickey, he is one of the most intelligent guys in baseball, one of those athletes that he says if he hadn't become a professional athlete, he would have become an English professor, an English lit. You look at his locker room when you're talking to him, and it's just filled with books, a lot of the classics. He loves C.S. Lewis, and he's got all these C.S. Lewis books in his locker there. So he had gone to Tennessee where he played baseball and was studying English literature, and that's where he wanted to go. If not for a baseball career, he wanted to become an English professor. So this past off season, he's a fan of Ernest Hemingway, had read Hemingway's The Snows of Kilimanjaro, and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and in doing so, raised salary for children that are involved, and not that they're involved willingly, but against their will, in human trafficking in India and other parts of the world. So he raised money and raised awareness and put his $4 million salary on the line by, and really his life, by climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. The Mets didn't want him to do it, but he did, and he did it for a cause. So he's one of those guys that you root for. He, you know, in light of everything going on now with the Sandusky trial that's going on, and more and more of what we're finding out about people in sports who, as children, were sexually abused by coaches and other people, he's a guy you root for, and he is really having a career year, and a year that, again, might see him become the first knuckleball pitcher to ever win the Cy Young Award.
What did you say, Peter, his ERA was?
2.20, which kind of gets into the next topic I want to talk about, which is going to segue into the next topic after that. And, you know, he may be credited now, R.A. Dickey, with a no-hitter. There was a play at third, ground ball to third base that David Wright tried to barehand it. The ball dropped. The official score ruled it a hit, and now Joe Torre is part of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is reviewing it, which you can review when official scores. You can't go back and change an umpire's decision, but you can look at an official score's decision, and that can be changed. And so they're looking at that. So if they decide that it wasn't a hit, that it was in fact an error, then he gets a no-hitter. But you look at what's going on in baseball right now. Okay, right after that, Matt King pitches a perfect game, the first perfect game in the Giants franchise history. And when you talk about the Giants franchise history, it obviously extends further back than their years in San Francisco. They go back about a half century. It goes to their years in New York as well. First guy in Giants franchise history to pitch a perfect game. Did it Wednesday night against the Houston Astros. It became the fifth no-hitter this season, the third this month, and the second perfect game of this season. Since 2009, there have been 19 no-hitters. What does that tell us about the steroid era in baseball?
That's for sure, yeah.
If anybody doesn't think that steroids made a difference, just look at the offensive numbers over the last several years. Look at all the 19 no-hitters since 2009 in 3 years. Five this season, two perfect games, three this month. We're only in June. Be that as it may, I will say this. The steroid era was very much not only in baseball, but with pitchers as well. In fact, Tom Verducci did a cover story for Sports Illustrated a couple of issues ago that highlighted a group of pitchers that came up through the minor leagues together and the one that used steroids. So he looked back on the steroid era from the perspective of pitchers, and it was a very compelling read about that. But I don't think it made as much of a difference with pitchers as it did with hitters, and I think the statistics and what has happened since stringent drug testing in Major League Baseball, what has happened with the offensive numbers and what we're seeing pitchers like R.A. Dickey and Matt Cain doing. You know, it's kind of like the baseball we remember back in the 60s when you had guys like Bob Gibson and Denny McClain and, you know, other guys. You know, Denny McClain won over 30 games and Bob Gibson had minuscule ERAs. And it's getting back to that kind of baseball. And I don't think it's driving away fans like they worried about when they were claiming that Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa saved baseball with that home run race. Baseball doesn't need that home run race or steroids to save it. I think it's a great enough sport that that is going to stand for a very long time in human society.
Well, Peter, with the record that R.A. Dickey has, by the way, what does R.A. stand for? Do you know?
His initials, his first name and middle name.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, what? You know, I knew it when I was writing about him for the New York Times back in spring training, and then I forgot.
Well, anyway, with the record that Dickey has going for him right now, he could very likely be looking at 28 to 30 game season.
Yeah, he's 10-1, not even the All-Star break. And, you know, it's a long season. Things happen. Is he going to go 10-1 over his next 11 games? Probably not. But theoretically, he could be, as you said, a guy in the mid-20s. Or if he stays hot all season, that with that knuckleball, I mean, there's no wear and tear hardly on the arm. He could maybe become the next 30-game winner in baseball. And, by the way, it's Robert Allen Dickey.
Robert Allen, okay. Bobby Allen.
And now you know.
Now you know. Thank you, Peter. And by the way, the Mets fans have got to be happy because they, I guess thanks to the Rays, have won 3 in a row, and they're now in second place, 4.5 games behind the Washington Nationals. And in fact, Peter, before we get to our next topic that we wanted to get onto with Lance Armstrong, spend a moment talking about the Washington Nationals. From my perspective, who would have ever thought they'd be in first place?
Well, they have methodically been building not only this team but this organization. And when you were looking at the Nationals back in the day and they were getting Steven Strasburg, and I say back in the day, it wasn't too many years ago, but when they were getting Steven Strasburg via the draft and then Bryce Harper via the draft, the reason why they got those two guys is because they had the number one overall pick, and the reason why they had the number one overall pick was because they were awful. But then they started complementing them with some other players and working their farm system with guys like Steve Lombardozzi and Ryan Zimmerman, and, you know, bringing in pitchers like Edwin Jackson and Gio Gonzalez this offseason. And, you know, we kind of knew that they were going to contend this year, but we didn't think Bryce Harper was going to have this kind of impact this season. Everybody knew that he was going to be an impact player and a superstar in Major League Baseball. That seemed to be a ticket. His ticket was punched for that. But to do it now as a 19-year-old and really make a difference for that team,
wow,
they're exciting. They're exciting, and I kind of thought they'd be bouncing around the top three positions in the NL East, but they're kind of commanding that division, and it doesn't look like anybody's going to overtake them. Now, you look at the Mets, and they have overachieved this year, and a lot of people think that they're going to crash and burn at some point, but they continue to overachieve. Now, the three games of this one against the Tampa Bay Rays, very impressive. The three games before that, they were swept by the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
Yankees are their crosstown rivals. So, you know, there are some chinks in their armor that teams like the Yankees expose, but then they come right back and beat a very good Tampa Bay Rays team, which is another team like the Mets that are overachieving. And every time you think, the Rays, they've lost too many players, they're going to be out of it this year, you know, they start the year dominating first place for most of the season in the AL East.
In fact, this is, I think,
the funnest division to watch in baseball right now.
That's right. It's really a hot division indeed between the Yankees, the Orioles, which are they kind of a surprise to you?
Absolutely. Now, the only thing that doesn't surprise me is what Buck Showalter is doing there. When they got Buck Showalter, this is a guy who built the Yankees and then was fired right before that tremendous run that started in 1996. At that time, George Steinbrenner was banned from baseball, and it was Showalter and Gene Michael and that scouting staff that put that team together, that drafted Derek Jeter. And unfortunately, he got fired right after that season, and they brought in Joe Torre, and then they go on a World Series run. Then he gets hired by the Arizona Diamondbacks when they became a new franchise, and was, I mean, he picked out colors and before they even played a game, he was working for them for over a year and helped build that franchise from the ground up. Then he gets fired, And lo and behold, in 2001, right after he gets fired, the Diamondbacks beat the Yankees in that World Series that went down to the ninth inning when Mariano Rivera lost it, blew a save. That was the 9/11, the post 9/11 World Series that went into November, and Jeter hit the home run and was called Mr. November. That was a team that Buck Showalter had built and got fired, and then saw them win the World Series. Now he comes to the Baltimore Orioles. Not surprising that he's building them. I just didn't think it would happen this quickly in two seasons.
Well, with the Orioles, Peter, they've really not enjoyed success since the days of their manager, who all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken and Ripken, but before that.
Well, the glory days were the Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson,
exactly.
Luke Powell days.
Right.
Jim Palmer and Dave McNally and Mike Cuellar and all those pitchers. That one season, I think they had 420 game winners. But they had success, obviously, during the Cal Ripken years. Some pretty good success, postseason success. Remember that 1996 postseason when the Yankees went to the World Series, the AL Championship Series was that home run ball that Jeter hit to right field that kid Jeffrey Mayer reached over and grabbed, and it was ruled a home run and kind of altered that postseason. That was against the Orioles. That was Cal Ripken's team, and they were on the verge of going to the World Series. But since then, they have not been very good at all.
Yeah, it's Earl Weaver is who I was trying to think of.
Yeah, Earl Weaver was the manager. Not beloved, but well-respected.
I understand he lives in the Tampa Bay area now.
No, Miami. If he's moved recently, but I talked to him several years ago, and he had come up from Miami to a Manatees game and interviewed him up in the press box there, and he was living down in Miami area. And his connection was with Miami is the Orioles all during the years that you're talking about spring trained in Miami, so he was settling down there.
I used to always attend their games when I lived in Miami. I'm surprised I didn't grow up an Oriole fan, but they used to treat me very well. They used to have quite a spread.
Yeah, well, you're still young at heart. You're still growing. You can become an Oriole fan now. It's a good time to jump on that bandwagon.
Exactly. A real fair weather fan there, yeah. Let's very quickly, Peter, because unfortunately we're short on time as always, but let's turn to some new doping charges that Lance Armstrong is trying to dodge.
The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, the USDA, USADA, has released, it was obtained by the Washington Post, a 15-page letter charging that they've got samples that were collected in 2009 and 2010 that, quote, are fully consistent with blood manipulating, including EPO use and or blood transfusions. I've defended Lance Armstrong. I mean, his books were some of the most inspirational books about his cancer battle and what he's doing now with cancer. And again, a guy that you'd want to root for, but there's just been so much smoke about him and former team members that have said that he doped, and now this, and it's very sad. And he has gotten involved in triathlons, and he was going to compete in his first Ironman World Championship in Hawaii, which is the granddaddy of all the triathlons, and Hawaii was very excited to have him. The sport was very excited to have him, and now they're banning him because of these of what's going on with the USADA charging that they've got some blood samples that prove that he doped.
Incredible.
He could get stripped of his seven Tour de France wins as well. I mean, it really is sad. It's very sad.
It really is. Peter, in our remaining moments here, NBA Finals tied up now one game apiece.
Yeah, LeBron James, the criticism that he isn't clutch, and that's true to a degree. In the closing minutes last night, he put up a boneheaded three-point shot that could have cost them. But by the same token, the last five games, he's scored more than 30 points. Eight of the last nine games, playoff games, he scored more than 30 points. He takes the team on his shoulders. He is the best player in the game. And And he proved it last night. He had an almost flawless game. The Miami Heat have their hands full with this Oklahoma City team. And Oklahoma City just keeps coming back in games, and all through this postseason, Miami keeps coming back in series. So it is going to be a great, great NBA Finals. I've got Tom Wasden and Don Smith, the former basketball coach for BCC for many years, and Tom Wasden, local entrepreneur businessman, was a former coach at Jacksonville University, and they're coming over to my place Sunday night to watch Game 3, and that's going to be fun for me to sit there with two former college coaches that I have great respect for and they're good friends, and watch an NBA Finals and just see how they pick apart different things. I enjoy that, and I'm going to enjoy doing that with them, watching that Game 3 Sunday night.
That should be fun indeed.
In fact, Wasden's been texting me this whole time.